Hello, I'm Ted Ohashi, coming to you today from the offices of Frontier Consulting in Toronto, Ontario. I'm pleased to have with me today Dean Taylor, President and CEO of Diamcor. Hi, Dean.
How are you today?
Good.
Why
don't you start off by telling us a little bit about your background and your involvement with Diamcor?
Well, I became CEO of Diamcor about 4.5 years ago, largely at that point in time. The company's been around for around 8 years. Very, very strong operational team with a proven production history of operating projects on a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day basis. A lot of the projects we've had in the past have been very successful. And largely when I came in, the goal was to take the existing company, restructure it, and position it so that we were able to identify and acquire production-based assets to increase our ability to supply rough diamonds to the world market. Certainly the goal was to change and make sure that the focus of the company was based on production rather than exploration and take advantage of really the imminent shortfall that we're going to see, in which many industry analysts unanimously agree that we're heading towards in the coming years in terms of production and supply.
So you have some basic elements of your business philosophy, like you want to acquire rather than explore and...
Yeah, the exploration, a majority of the juniors in the diamond space, certainly the exploration phase of any type of mining sector is important. It's been largely an area that's been, it's very expensive, it's very risky. It's not really our forte. We certainly have been centered in on the processing of tailings reserves, which is very steady cash flow, the ability to recover 5 to 7 carats per 100 ton, steady models, easy operational, low cost. We also look at identifying very select alluvials, which we don't have and don't really plan to go down that road too much, but the current deal we're acquiring from De Beers is an alluvial where you get a certain amount of material that's pushed off of an existing very famous kimberlite and you're able to simply strip mine that material and recover it.
So just explain that to us again, just the difference between alluvial and eluvial.
Well, alluvial is typically something that a lot of people are very leery of, in the sense that what's happened is you've got paleo rivers or ancient rivers that have run over top of kimberlite pipes, and they've picked up material and consequently that material is transported downstream, sometimes hundreds of miles. It can go out into the ocean, and then as the rivers slow or meander or turn, those diamonds are deposited and form alluvial deposits. An eluvial deposit is different in the sense that it's a one-time event, whether it be glacial or otherwise, where you're simply seeing a stripping of a certain percentage of material or depth of material off of the actual source and then distributed on the adjacent properties. Venetia mine, for instance, is the third largest in the world, a very significant diamond mine producing somewhere in the neighborhood of 500,000 to 750,000 carats on a monthly basis. And in that case, which we're acquiring the two properties of Cronin and Dora adjacent to it, an estimated 1 vertical kilometer or about 1,000 kilometers or 1,000 meters of material has been pushed off and then distributed onto the two adjacent properties. So you end up with a much more consistent, you don't have the loss due to the transportation methods. It's a much more consistent deposit, and it obviously mirrors the source deposit as well. So it tells you a lot of things in terms of size, frequency, the quality of the diamonds you're going to get. So it's a very, very good project. And eluvial, like I say, they're very rare, and it's certainly quite a bit different than an alluvial.
Now, in the diamond business, you mentioned the magic name, De Beers.
Yes.
I mean, De Beers knows that stuff is there. Why don't they do it?
Well, that's a common question when we look at this asset and we say that there's a potential for us to do somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 20,000 carats a month. And, you look at that and say, well, our current 43-101 on it shows around 54 million tons or about 1.3 million carats in a very small area with certainly potential for growth. Why would they give it up? You're talking about Venetia being an open mine that they're using 200 plus ton hard axle trucks, different processing methods, all these types of things. And when you're talking about in 07, where they do somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 million carats a year or around 750,000 carats a month, an additional 20,000 is very much non-core to them, and it's not something that they're really too disturbed about divesting of. So what they look for in a group like us or any group they're divesting to is they want a proven operational capability. They want a significant black empowerment group that's very organized and very trustworthy with a large shareholder base that ensures that profits that come out of the operations are being distributed to a very broad-based group. In our case, we're affiliated with a well-known group called Nzala, which represents and has over half a million rural women shareholders. So this group owns parts of the state, you know, lottery, Sasol Oil. It's a very, very good group that De Beers is comfortable with, so they know the profits that are going to come out of the project are going to be widely distributed. So again, it's a situation where they want to be seen as giving back to junior mining, supporting junior mining, and in essence picking groups that are going to create jobs and benefit for South Africa at the same time.
So this is an acquisition you've been working on for a while. Where are you in terms of the process?
Well, like I said before, we started our planning largely about 4 years ago in terms of looking at and identifying projects. We are working on a couple of different projects that are De Beers acquisitions that we would like to complete. This particular acquisition we started about probably 2.5 years ago. We signed a definitive agreement and were chosen to actually, we won an RFP process to acquire the project about 16 months ago, and we're basically anticipating the transactional close somewhere in the next 45 to 60 days. All the suspensive conditions of the transactions, the access agreements, the right of access agreements, the licenses for all the geological work, all these types of things have been completed, and now we're in the final stage, which is simply the Section 11 transfer of the permits and that from De Beers names into ours. So 45 to 60 days is a fair number we're shooting for.
And something that's very important to investors is obviously your cash flow.
Certainly.
So once the acquisition is completed, how long do you think it'll be before cash flow begins?
Well, we're anticipating from the time of closing, we'd like to be on site, and our plans post-acquisition are to do a initial, the properties have been drilled already, there's been three different drilling programs, there's been bulk sampling, there's a mineral resource estimate that was generated by De Beers, a 43-101 done by us. The recommendations of the 43-101 were to simply go out, drill at 100 by 100 meter spacing. It was all done at 200 by 200 to identify the resource better and immediately go to trial mining. So we anticipate within 90 days of the time we close it, we'll be on site beginning the start of the drilling and trial mining. And those will largely define how quickly we're able to ramp up. The target is 7 to 10,000 carats a month within the first 12 months. With those numbers achieved, we should be cash flow positive somewhere in the ballpark of around $3 million in year one and about $5 million a year going forward. That, of course, is based on only the initial area that we're looking at with the 43-101. So if we're able to increase that, obviously those numbers will increase.
I guess all commodity markets have been soft lately, and I think diamonds have been a part of that. What do you expect from diamonds over the next 24 months?
Well, what we expect is we certainly expect to see some increase. From 2002 to 2007, 2008, we've seen about a 60% increase in diamond prices in the rough side of things. And certainly at that point, we were looking at a large disparity between what was able to be produced in the world and what was actually the demand scenario. The financial crisis obviously threw that for a loop. With De Beers and, basically four parties in the world making up 90% of the 150-odd million carats of diamonds that go in and come out of the world in a year. Though they cut production, and now we're finding at the beginning of 2010, prices are pretty much about where they were when we left off in 2008 before the dip. So for the next 24 months, the emerging markets of China and India are certainly coming on very, very strong. With the U.S. economy starting to recover, we certainly, every analyst and everybody in the industry understands the fact that we're headed for a pretty significant shortage here in the years to come.
And the fact that India and China are coming into the market, that sort of parallels what the gold market is like, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit similar. We sort of, everybody, the buzzword of China and India coming on, and that you have to realize that the U.S. used to consume about 50% of the diamonds worldwide. You know, estimates 50%. Some people think that's maybe going to be 35% going forward. We think this whole disparity between supply and demand is largely going to be driven not just by China and India, but a little bit of the recovery in the U.S. market. If we see any kind of recovery in the U.S. market in combination with the continued growth of China and India, we're certainly looking at, you know, dramatic shortages. Most of the diamonds in the world, the known diamond mines are, their production levels are very much set. A lot of the mines are now older. The production levels are actually going down. And there's really nothing in the way of discoveries been made for a long time, and certainly nothing of any significance coming on in the next 5 to 7 years that's going to meet those demands. So really, it's kind of a scenario where it's inevitable that there will be a shortage. It's just kind of when. So our whole positioning was based on, let's not go out and try and find a kimberlite that might cost us 150 or 200 million. The upside, if you find it, is very large. But the time frame is still 5 to 7 years to get it into production. So we focus on projects that are, you know, based on our model, we look at stuff that we want it to be able to be put into production within 12 months. We certainly want to see it have reserves that give us the ability to have a 10-plus year project. And certainly the modeling we do, we want to see an indication that there's an ability to achieve somewhere in around the 50% margin on it. So that's what we focus on. We feel very strongly that those parties that are in production and positioned well as we go into these next few years are going to do very well.
So outside of the De Beers project, are there other things that DimeCore is looking at?
Yeah, we have an ongoing initiative to look at different projects and evaluate them. You know, we typically say that, you know, our business is about the identification, acquisition, and putting projects into production. And part of that process is reviewing a number of different possibilities at all times. We have other larger transactions, tailing-based transactions, which we like that business very much. So we're constantly looking at ways to increase our capabilities for production, but at the same time, we're very focused on making sure that once we identify a project, we bring it into production, get it to cash flow, and not try and have a multitude of projects with a perceived potential upside. We'd rather focus on ones that have a real ability to be put into production.
Okay, and finally, what is your financial position?
Currently, we just closed our first tranche of the current financing we're doing, so we have somewhere in the neighborhood of around $2 million in treasury. Out of those funds, we put that into general capital. We're going to do another $2 million here that will close up or in that ballpark in the next kind of 30 days. That will fully fund all our requirements for the finalization of the purchase of the De Beers Kronandura, the pending Kronandura acquisition. And it will give us sufficient funds to do our drilling and trial mining program and get us into a trial mining production out there. So we have no real immediate needs after that to raise any significant capital, and would really look at doing so based on the fact that we would secure another acquisition. So we don't want to dilute any further. This project allows us to be sufficient, not require going to the market any further.
Right. Well, thanks, Dean. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot. Nice talking to you.
Yeah. I'd like to thank Dean Taylor for coming in and telling his DimeCore story today. It's obviously a very exciting one, and shareholders have a lot to look forward to over the next 24 months, and I'll look forward to talking to him again to see how things have turned out. From the offices of Frontier Consulting in Toronto, this is Ted Ohashi.